traditional sport than esports, and you'll see more physical type games because technology is going to start to enable that. So very much linked and very much exciting.
And when you're going off the questions, I'm going to go wherever with this conversation. I just am curious, when you're listening and you're listening to the market, you're listening to players and watching what's happening out there and making decisions about how you push your own technology forward to kind of meet them where they are or exceed their expectations, is there a process? How do you guys do that? How do you do the listening part of that and the watching part of that?
Well, one of the things that we do is we try to make sure that we have a lot of gamers on our team. That's super important. We have people that are actually not just think the technology is cool, but they play it. They experience it. They want to make it better. And on top of that, we do a lot of talking. We do a lot of talking to gamers, to esports teams, people that can sponsor on esports teams. And we get that. We understand what's important. That's why a lot of the things, the technologies that we've been working on, once again, things are evolutionary. But so we understand that desire to progress. So we recently put out, in cooperation with a company called Mobilytics, like a machine learning-based coaching, right? So you can start getting better. It analyzes your gameplay versus millions of other users' gameplay and looks at your weaknesses because we know users want to get better. And then, you know, everybody, as they talk about immersion, I think we are all promised the holodeck, right? So you want that experience that you go and you've got this 3D environment and you're interacting with people just like and you can go in any world. I think if we picture what we want the future to be, we know that we want it to be something that we experience, that not just the screen level, but more being inside of there.
Yeah, very cool. When you think about new opportunities in terms of, you know, HP and Red Bull, some of the earliest adopters have really had new, interesting opportunities in esports. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that brand opportunity has been like for you in esports?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the hallmarks of brands and esports is the notion that brands themselves over time have become much more porous. You'll all remember back in the day when a brand could throw you a message sort of one way, on the TV, you know, in a magazine, whatever it was. There wasn't really the notion of a conversation happening. And so I think that's one of the great opportunities for brands is we're much more porous in this space. And so that leads to a couple of things. One, we talked a little bit this afternoon about listening. So one of the things that we do is a tremendous amount of research and listening so that we can deliver insights to the teams that are building the work that we would put out into the marketing space. And one of the things that led us to was this really unique opportunity to think about the kinds of people we might align our brand with. So one of the examples I wanted to share was a story about Stephanie Harvey. She's a 5-time champion up in Canada. Amazing, you know, athlete, really, right? And great at what she does and is part of the story that we tell about our brand. And, you know, truly the hallmark of being porous is that she herself has influenced the work that we've done. So she has a series of things that are important to her. That's then translated into some of the work that she's done. There are things that she talks about specifically, you know, that people who play are athletes. And so what is the role of discipline? What is the role of practice? That is a great way for a brand to respond to feedback that they're getting and to the notion that you're porous because you want to be part of that community, again, authentically and credibly. I think Red Bull's a great example of, you know, their brand standing for something that can make you better at what you do. It can give you extra energy, extra power, and how they've woven that into the stories that they tell. They're great examples of how brands become immersed in a space and are there authentically and in a way that makes sense.
Yeah, great. Judy, you were talking a little bit about just the gaming experience of 10 years from now. When we look at the gaming business evolving, do you see changes on the horizon in terms of the gaming business itself?
So 1/3 of the world's population games today. And stick that in, that's a huge target market that you have right there. And I'm not saying 1/3 of the population participates in esports, but 1/3 of the world's population games at some level. And the gaming industry today is already bigger than the film, the television, and the music industry combined. I call it one of the biggest secrets, right? Because so many people don't understand right now how big this industry is.
But what that means is everybody wants a part of it. Everybody wants to see how they can play in it. Everybody wants to see how they can participate in it, which is great. Because what we're going to see is we're going to see there gets to be more of a value chain in the industry. The best way I can equate it is if you think about baseball. If you play baseball, you've probably started playing T-ball, then Little League, then you played in school, then you might have played in college, then you might have played Farm League, and then you might have gone to the pros, and there's these different levels. But there's this whole industry around it. Everybody from the people that make the field, to paint the field, to do the bats, to the clothes, to the hats, to the fan around it, the infrastructure, the events. Gaming is the same way. This entire infrastructure is forming around it that's creating this brand new business. And I think some of the changes that are coming, I think cloud is an interesting change that is coming. With cloud, I'll take a step back. So there was a time when video started to come that everybody was terrified when video came out that you wouldn't need televisions anymore because now you could watch video on any screen. And we know what happened with that isn't that you didn't watch video on your television again because that 75-inch piece of glass in your living room is probably the optimal viewing experience. But what you did is you watched television on the device that's available to you at the moment. And cloud is going to do the same thing for gaming. It's going to make you be able to game the game that you want on the screen that you want that's available at the moment with the same community that you have now. And you can imagine how the business around that is a little different. And once again, I think it's a very exciting time to be in gaming because we're on this forefront of this. We're on this part where the industry is going to be different. The technologies that are going to drive this, the type of companies that are going to succeed, are starting to evolve. We'll start to see big data take a bigger role. Exciting thing, right? Everything you do on a computer can be tracked. You know, you hit that mouse, you'll know about it, whatever you do there. I think we'll also see AI start to play a role that's creating these more personalized, immersive environments. So I think with big data, you'll start to see more personalization, you'll start to see more data input, what you're able to do. I think you'll start to see those start to turn into more immersive. And every time of that, the business kind of takes another odometer click and kind of, there's people that evolve with that, there's people that disappear with that.
It'll be interesting to see, to the marketing perspective, how consumer expectations will change. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about what consumers have come to expect from esports now and how that might evolve.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think one of the key things that consumers really, really expect from brands today is transparency. And that's incredibly important. It's not just a buzzword. It's you actually being clear about your intentions with your audience. And I can share an example of that that's not necessarily a gaming example, but it is one where we as a brand are really forthright in our intentions. I think it's a nice way of kind of demonstrating that. So we, for the last couple of years, have been at the music festival Coachella. And you might wonder why a brand like ours would be at a place like that. And one of the things that we use that experience for, again, around starting with the insights. Why do fans go to festivals? What is the experience about? It's not just about the music, that's very much a part of it. But they're there for a myriad of different experiences, and understanding what those are means that when we craft the experience, we can pay those expectations off. But we're super clear that you're there to interact with the technology. So one of the things people love to do at festivals, as you probably well know, is to take a picture and post it, or show it with their friends, or show it with some music, or, you know, add action and light, and things like that. And so we have places to do that, but you do it using our technology. So it's a very transparent relationship in terms of adding value and why the brand is there. I think that's super important. You know, you need to stand up and step up as a brand in terms of why you're there and what it is that you're hoping to do. And a big part of that is the listening. You know, listening to people, giving you feedback on your products. One of the things that we do in the gaming world is not only do we have influencers, but we have things like the Squad. And the Squad is made up of a whole series of people who specialize in different areas of gaming, and they talk about it, whether they're on their own channels or whether they're on Twitch. That is value added, but we're super transparent that it comes to you from our brand and that they're probably going to be using our products. And so I think that's the way that you want to do it, to, again, ladder to authenticity, which I think is a cornerstone of that. Mm-hmm. You want to be super, super transparent in terms of expectations.
Yeah. And switching gears a little bit, focusing on the gamers themselves, we know that product experience is so paramount for them. What are gamers today looking for when it comes to technology that really enhances that experience?
Well, like the gaming is playing and watching. And so there's watching the play, there's the enhancing the experience of playing. And I think everybody is once again, I want to be able to play on whatever device I am at the moment. So me and my husband, by the way, if anybody hears from Sega, I need to thank you. You probably saved my marriage with Soul Calibur because we got to kick each other's butt without actually having to kick each other's butt. But there's that experience that when we play at home, we never play on a console because it's in front of the television. It's the right experience at the time. It's what we need. You know, we're able to play together, and we have the TV, and we're able to do that. When we play on our own, we generally play on our PC. Sometimes we play against each other. Sometimes we're on the same team, but it's kind of an experience that we have. And then when I'm traveling, if I want to play, I play things on my mobile device. But the experience is so different on all three. And I think what users are looking for is they're looking for, first of all, an experience that's more cohesive form, that they have the same environment and the same opportunities available to them no matter where they are, much like you get with other types of media. And obviously gaming is extremely intensive. It's processing intensive, it's power intensive, but it's getting there. Technology's only going to get better to allow us to do that. And then if we look at the viewing experience, what you expect from the viewing experience is I want to have a real-time viewing experience. I want to be able to watch what I want whenever I want. I want it to be easy to find. I don't have to go through 50 different channels. In fact, I think this is an area right now we already see so many people streaming. There's probably all these great things you're missing because somebody's got to find it first, and it's got to be popular. It's generally sort by what are people watching, right? And the ability to find things, the ability to discover the things that I want to see is very difficult right now. And I think what users are loving is the fact that what they love to do is finally getting the validation and recognition that it hasn't had before. But we're going to see the transformation of that into better experiences, better browse. The other thing that has happened across other industries that we haven't seen yet is we haven't seen the consolidation or the Netflix of gaming. And I don't know if that's what viewers, I don't know if that's what users necessarily want. But what they do want is easy access to the games they play, the people they play against, the people they want to watch, the teams they root for. And all of those things right now are very fragmented, I guess. It's very much in its infancy of how this is going to evolve. And I think if you were to start from scratch again today, and you found that rebuild the gaming industry, you'd build it a little different. You'd build it where all these things are more cohesive, but you've got extremely large brands that are saying, I have this, I want to control it, I don't want anybody else in. I have this. And I don't blame them. They saw what happened with the music industry and the film industry, and they're trying. You have to protect your intellectual property and your content, but also figure out ways to open it up the right way for the users and make it a more consistent, even experience.
You've given me an idea for a panel for next year on gaming and couples. Is it some kind of couples therapy that happens when you're playing together? Or
you don't have to ask her, actually. We'll talk about it next year.
I was never so excited as when I went to a game arcade and they had the live version of Soul Calibur. You got to swing your arms and kick, and it happened, right? This was a while back, right? So I'm like, all of a sudden, we took it to another level. That was terrific.
Can we get that? Awesome. So over the past few years, we've seen the gaming influencer community explode, of course. How do you see influencers really driving the future of esports for HP and the industry at large?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And I think there's a little bit of duality here. I think number one, influencers certainly are not going to go away. I think that we'll continue to see influencers play a role. And I'll just draw back again for reference. You know, I think in years gone past, you might tap into a celebrity to attach to your brand for whatever the reason may be. And I think one of the issues that has happened there in the past is that celebrity really genuinely imbued in the field that you're in, or is it a piece of sort of more borrowed equity? when I think about it from a marketing perspective. And so I think you're going to see influencers involved. First of all, they're incredibly important. And one of the reasons that we work with Steph or Miss Harvey is because she also represents and is close to some of the values that we have as a corporation. So HP happens to have the most diverse board in all of technology. We take diversity and inclusion, you know, incredibly importantly as a brand. We sponsor CLG, who have an all-women's team, and Steph is at the center of the world for us in terms of influencers, along with many others. And so I think that's really important. And influencers do influence audiences, but they also influence the brand. And that's the point that I was referring to in the work that Steph does to help us really up our game, and that was not a pun intended, but, you know, to kind of up our game to really do the right thing. The other conundrum that we're thinking about a little bit as a brand is the role of the micro-influencer versus the role of the macro-influencer. So the macro-influencer, well-known, tons of followers, kind of a star, right, in their own realm. And the relationship that they have with their followers or with people who are interested in them, want to learn from them, want to be more like them, versus micro-influencers, and specifically the role of a micro-influencer against Gen Z, who, as we all know, are up and coming in the field. You know, you look at the majority, I think, of the users around games like Fortnite, way, way down into Gen Z. And so for Gen Z, one of the things that we've learned over the years is that micro-influencer, while it is much more kind of narrow, it's also much more deep. And so I think that's something that's going to be kind of interesting to watch. Where does that go from a gaming perspective? And then I would just lead back to some of the other proof points around the squad. For a while, we have this, you know, the own dojo, things like that that add value, but that they're influencers people look up to, want to learn from, want to spend time with. I think the influencer is alive and well, and we'll continue to see that evolve over time, for sure.
And Judy, curious, the business of gaming and its impact on traditional sports and vice versa. So it seems like they're learning from each other right now. I wonder if there's some key learnings that other industries can actually take from sports. And we talk a lot about what you can apply from traditional, but it seems like there's some things you can learn from esports even in its early days.
There definitely is. And I think if we start looking at one of the things that esports has that traditional sports doesn't have right now, it's everything you do can be tracked and analyzed. Every mouse click you make, every movement you make, every eye movement you make, what part of the map you're looking at, what you're doing, which is a little scary. But as somebody once put it, I don't care what Google Maps tracks what I'm doing, because it gets me from point A to point B without a problem. So as long as it's helping me, I'm okay with it's doing that. And I think esports has the ability to say, how can I use this to help make better players, to help find people that are mastering it? Like, all of a sudden you've got a treasure trove of analytics that traditional sports doesn't have, and I think esports can lead the way there. Because it's harder on traditional sports. I know there's teams that send, you know, they have their films analyzed real time when players are playing to be able to say, when these two players are on the court, you know, they typically score this many points against these when these other players are on, but if they put this person in, I should put this other. The stats are there, they're just much harder. They're all very manual right now. But esports have the ability to automate so much stuff. And I know there's companies that are looking at this, something we're looking at is how do you make esports better with the data that you have? And then I think traditional sports, we can learn a lot more from that. Because once again, they have an infrastructure that works. If you look at the sports that have succeeded over time, they have an infrastructure that allows you to play at a variety of different levels and compete. Because we find there's three basic reasons that people game. One is they're competitive. And what we find is if somebody's competitive, they're probably two-thirds likely to also participate and watch regular sports because that's their nature, right? The second reason is because of immersion. They want to immerse themselves. They want to role play. They want to be something different. They want to be in a different environment. Or three, they want to be social. And I think traditional sports could learn because I think those three things are applicable to you. You've got the competitive person. You've got the person who wants to immerse themselves in the sport. And you've got the person that wants to be social. And I think traditional sports know, beyond just the way that you market and communicate out, but being able to build social channels to allow fans to be more interactive with the teams, to allow fans to be more interactive with themselves, is something that traditional sports could learn from esports. Mm-hmm. Because it's exciting. Even if you're not in the room, even if you're not there, it's exciting. So the social activity, if you're watching these things on Twitch, or you're watching things on private channels, the community is still building. It can get better and it can get better. One day I think watching online, you're going to be able to get a lot of the excitement that you get from being in that arena. And I think traditional sports could really learn from that.
And Emily, I wanted to talk about the role that you foresee the business community playing. Business community is growing every year, its interest is growing in esports, and just beyond even just the development of technology. And what you think, if you listen to your crystal ball, what consumers could expect to see from brands in the future in the esports space.
Yeah, I think it's a great question, and I would love to have a crystal ball, especially in a place like Las Vegas. I think three things really kind of come to mind in terms of what you can expect to see. I think number one, more sponsorships for sure, and sponsorships that have all of the characteristics that we've talked about this afternoon that are authentic, that are credible, that are transparent, that genuinely want to be a part of the community and not just because of the tremendous growth. So I think that's one that you're definitely going to see more and more of. Another one, I think, is partnerships, which are slightly different in terms of the way in which they're constructed. So, you know, we've participated as a brand in many different kinds of partnerships, and I think you'll see more of that over time as brands lean in and want to be part of the community differently than just a pure sponsorship. And so I think sponsorship, partnership. And then another one that I think that's going to be really interesting is the role of experiential and kind of events and event marketing in this particular space. You know, TwitchCon right around the corner in just a couple of weeks. I think places like that, places where authentically gamers, communities, brands, players, influencers all come together, are going to continue to be an evolving part of this space. And I think part of that is experiential gives you the opportunity not only to connect in a really meaningful way, but it also, I think, allows us to connect in an emotional way, which I think is a really important way for brands to advance their agenda. They want to be relevant, they want to be connected to their audiences. And then it also provides a great, sort of a great backdrop for storytelling, which I think brands want to be able to do when they're at, you know, at events like this. We're going to be telling a pretty big story here in the future about Play to Progress, the seven tenets of that, what that means, why we chose those seven tenets, why we're moving into that zone competitively. And so I think that's great because people can come in and be part of it and play and experience. So I think those are the three things that you'll see that are going to continue to grow over time in the space, sort of from a brand and from a marketing perspective, which means lots of opportunity on all sides. Yeah, so I think those are the three big ones that we'll see continue to evolve and grow.
And Julie, I'll ask you to look into your crystal ball as well. We talked about these technologies already, but if there are any technologies that you see really kind of revolutionizing the industry, we talked about cloud, but anything else comes to mind?
Yes, and then there's a crystal ball, but like I said, gaming continues to evolve. So we do an activity at HP. We look at what is gaming in 2035 look like. And 2035, it seems so long from now, 15 short years before 2035. And we try to say, what does it look like? What are the psychological reasons that people are going to be playing? What are the things they're going to be doing? How is it going to be different? One of the quick, easy things to jump to is the word. I think it's super important. But I think there's some other things that are going to evolve that are going to help change gaming. So you can imagine, we talked about, you know, originally you play a game and you play against yourself on the game, and then you had the ability to play against somebody on the game, and then you had, you know, multiplayer, and you had massive multiplayer. You know, now you have, you know, you play your friends, you play against your friends, but you look at the future and you go, am I looking at a world that I'm able to play me against 2 million people? Or am I looking at a world that I can have large, massive teams with massive battles and massive fronts going on at the same time? And I think the answer is definitely yes, right? It's not just 5-on-5 or whatever game you're playing, what the number of people that you look at. I think you'll start having more sophisticated games. I think you'll have more sophisticated plans. I think you'll have more sophisticated roles. be a lot of fun, right? It'll be these real life battles that you're able to do across. And then as we start looking at what the infrastructure is going to provide. Now, we hear a lot about 5G. I think 5G is one of our next stepping stones, right? 5G's got a promise associated with it that all these experiences are going to be more instant. Can you imagine what we're going to see by 2035? Imagine a world where the data that you're looking at, or the resources you're looking at, whether they're graphics or no matter how research intensive, could be available to you pretty much almost instantaneously. You know, what that can mean about the things that you can build. So I think one of the things that's going to change a lot, I think we're going to see the democratization of game development. Not just of gamers, but of game development. I think you're going to be able to see anybody that's great at storytelling be able to create awesome games and make them available. Well, once this happens, once again, we've got this, there's a lot of content out there. There's a lot of games out there. Now, how do you find what you're looking for? How do the users find them? And I think we'll start seeing the fragmentation change a little bit. As we start to grow this, you know, right now we've got a lot of different game developers. Imagine when we have, you know, got a lot of indies, the menu scratching all these really good games. I think we'll start seeing better, let's just say search engine recommendation because those are so old school, but better ways to find the communities you're looking for and better ways to find the type of experiences that you're seeking and become part of. I think also, if you look at the three reasons why you play, you know, there's the compete, the immerse, and the social. Those don't go away, but what they mean could be very different, right? And so I think if you're a competitive person since the day of the day of time, you used to throw rocks, you know, now you play games, I think there's always going to need to be a competitive outlet. I don't think that's going to change a lot, but I think the way you socialize is going to be very different. Maybe not talking about just the ability to talk to somebody as you play a game, imagine that you're now able to start having more haptic, more feel, you know, more capability of being in that environment with somebody. I laugh because there's an entire generation that delays getting their driver's license now, right? Because they have a way to talk to each other instantaneously. Imagine taking that to the next level. You're not only just talking to them, you're kind of with them. And I think by 2035 we'll be there.
Strangely not that far away.
And getting more possible every day, and it'll be fun to see.
That's amazing. I want to allow time for all of you to ask questions. So I'm going to hop down here. Who's got a question? Right here?
No, we don't need it. I got a good voice. Big question for you there. I think you're talking about like their kind of leads into where do you see virtual reality or like mixed reality kind of an influence into the esports side of things?
So, up until now, there's the promise of VR, right? There's been small successes. I think Pokemon augmented reality was a nice step there, but I think as the infrastructure gets better, the technology, the ability to deliver gets better, that we'll definitely be in a world that virtual reality is there. It's got some drawbacks right now. Wearing the headset, not always that enjoyable and everything. We at HP have been doing a lot with virtual reality in the commercial field, and there's been so many more advancements. I think we're going to start seeing this coming back into gaming. I think it was a little early when it first came to gaming. I think we're going to see VR back into gaming within a few years. Like I said, I think we're going to see convergence between physical games with VR, with esports, into creating a whole new category of gaming. But personally, I'm still betting heavily that VR is a critical component in gaming in the future.
Other questions? Anyone? Are you sure?
Is it the end of a very long day?
All right.
Hold on. Emily, what should a brand do to make sure that they're authentic? You talk a lot about authenticity. If you're a brand, do you need to play? Do you need to talk? What do you think are the most important things for a brand to be authentic?
Oh, yeah, sure. So that one for me is really, really intrinsically connected to the brand's purpose. So what is your purpose for being here? What is your purpose for being part of this community, for wanting to intersect with an incredible, growing field that's amazing and has all kinds of innovations every single day? What is the purpose? So we're clear on our purpose for that. I think you look at other brands and it's very clear. You want to make sure you connect your purpose to allow that level of authenticity, because otherwise gamers, audiences, fans, for sure millennials and for sure Gen Z are going to see right through it. And then that's bad, right? Because then you've lost sort of your way in. So that is incredibly important. It's just that sense of purpose and why would you want to be there? What's the natural connection point? And I think the other piece is, a level of curiosity and respect. Not all of us, in brands are hardcore gamers. I will tell you, in the marketing organization, we have a lot of gamers to keep us grounded in sort of what are the truths versus what you might think about as, other brand sort of assumptions you might make, which I think is a big mistake. So I think that's another piece of it, is that curiosity and that tenacity to want to be part of a community and to want that community to progress and to grow in a way that's really cool. Yeah.
Thanks. One of the issues, I think, with esports and the proliferation on PC specifically is the cost. When you look at emerging countries and you look at some of these areas, how can we in an industry get more technology in more people's hands? Specifically talking about PC, because consoles are in a different place, but as we look forward, to get the best PC rigs, you're talking $7,000, and that gate stops a lot of people from coming into that level, and some people think they have to have that to compete in esports. So I've been in the industry like 25 years, and when PC was actually cool, then it got console, and now it's cool again. So how do we grow it?
So I think that's one of the reasons that we are seeing gaming growing so quickly on mobile, because it's an inexpensive device that's in everybody's hands. And if I was a game developer, one of the things that I would be doing is I'd be making sure my game could be played across all of these devices with a consistent experience. I think esports, that's important, is looking to make sure that you're developing games and play that can be played across a variety of different devices that aren't as process intensive. And there's going to be some IP, some content publishers are going, I want my content to look this way, but I think that's one of the things that will help esports a lot. I think this is an area that with cloud, one of the battles they're up against that I know they're working very hard on is how do you get an equal playing field across multiple devices, across multiple types of internet connections. And not even the connection from the cloud to the user, but the user's home environment, right? That last 10 feet of connection, and how do you make sure that you're able to balance that out? I think that's critical to grow esports, as you put it, in emerging countries that may not have the devices that we do that are able to power the local level. So I think everybody's seen that, and everybody's seen, if I get to cloud, my target audience turns into that one-third of the world's population, not the percent of that population that can buy an expensive gaming rig. Do you agree, or do you have, you've been in this a while?
No, I'm just curious.
The questions we ask when we go out and talk to like graphics cards manufacturers and everything. One of the first questions that we used to ask is, do you know what games are coming out that are really going to use your product? Because that drove a lot of PC sales, right? personally, we should all thank PUBG, because PUBG required an extremely high-end machine to play at a good level. So there were a lot of sales worldwide for us as a result of PUBG. Now, as we work more with publishers, and as we look at the growth of our machines, and we look and we go, this mainstream gaming is super important. And a lot of publishers they're working with are thinking the same way. How do I get games that are competitive and interactive that aren't PUBG, that don't have to be played at that level, that can be played on less expensive users, but used by more users? And I think you'll see not only us, but you'll see a lot of companies that are pushing and saying, we're going to push more on that mainstream, because that is the future of gaming. That is going to help us get. I agree with the K-12, K-12, and building those up. I get super excited. We work with a lot of high schools and universities that are building their programs, and they don't have the budgets necessarily this high end, but they want to build these programs so that people can game, they can learn technology, they can work on strategy, teamwork, all the good things that come out of it. But I think that's where you also see the publishers starting to build more and more in that mainstream market. I also don't think it hurt that Fortnite, a free game, made like $1 billion being able to be available on every device. And I think publishers have recognized that they're going to be far more profitable if they build something that can be competitive on multiple devices. Is it 100% there yet? No. Is my mobile connection the same as Emily's mobile connection at all times? Not yet. But I think we're going to start seeing technologies that help balance that to create a fairer, more competitive environment. That's the number one thing we hear from China, which is the anti-cheat and the playing field. We're such a competitive environment there, and I think they drive a lot of what we see coming into the gaming next year.
I think that's spot on. I think I was part of the team. I was based in Singapore for several years with HP, and we started this process of kind of taking the gaming environments more deeply into countries like China. And we found that there was more of an appetite for sort of that, we call it casual gaming. I think there's a bunch of different ways of thinking about it. But the notion that you want to game at a certain level and you want to watch is really what drove that sort of specification around that particular product, which is not scoped at $7,000. And what we have found in some cases, and I'm sure you would agree, is that when people are scoping rigs at that, they're making it themselves, right? I build my own. I might need you for this or that or the other, but I know exactly what I want, what I think is going to drive my level of performance, so I'm going to build it myself. Versus the enthusiast or kind of hardcore gamer, where you might be able to cross the line there with a rig, but I think the future really does sort of democratize that experience, and that I think is part of what we're seeing. Certainly from a marketing perspective, we are looking at the halo that then pulls down into that more democratized experience across the board, and I totally agree with you on education. I also think the other layer on education is we're going to see parts of education get gamified, right? When you think about kids learning, they can learn and do scenarios in real environments. Part of what Judy was talking about in the application of VR commercial is simplistically it's the military, right? How they can gamify and experience and do all kinds of things. I think you're going to see that in the future as a way for kids to learn and understand scenarios and make decisions, learning teams and things like that. I think it's a great question, but I think those are the things that you'll start to see over time.
All right, thank you all for your great questions. Can I get a round of applause for Emily and Judy?